All right, that was an instrumental by Bill Emerson. Welcome to New York, and in the meantime, I still have Bill on the phone, and we've been joined by Sonny Osborne. How are you, Sonny?
Bill, welcome to New York. Hey, I'm doing good. How you, Bill?
I'm doing good myself. Good to hear your corny old voice, Sonny.
Yeah. Still the same old whiny. Falsetto, whatever. Hey, I just had lunch with Daniel Grindstaff.
Oh.
Banjo player from East Tennessee. Mm-hmm. East Tennessee. And good friend, old time friend. I've known him since he was around 11 or 12 years old, something like that. And just had lunch with him and enjoyed the visit with him.
He's expecting a baby, isn't he, soon?
He sure is. Yeah, 5 weeks. Yeah. And she was with him, too.
Oh, good, good.
Just the sweetest people, man. They're good folks.
He's a good guy. I still call him, every time I call him Daniel, he laughs because he knows where that came from.
Yep, Daniel.
Daniel. Sonny, Bill, we were talking about just writing tunes and traveling and the old Jimmy Martin days and things that the way that Bill learned and his approach to playing, and he did mention you quite often as someone that he listened to, and so the plan was to patch you in, and you and he can talk about the old days, the new days, the middle days, whatever you want to pick up on. And while folks, while we were off listening to Welcome to New York, what Sonny was saying is, who's welcome to New York? What was that song about?
We won't go there. Oh, I got some stories about New York, and I don't want to part with. Red Allen, the first time that we drove to New York City was before Interstate, and we had to go Route 1 and 9 right through the middle of New York, and it took two guys. I mean, we're hillbillies, you know. We'd never been out there before. And it took two guys to get us through there, one guy to drive and the other guy to sit over there and say, you turn right here and go up there. No, turn left here. And, I mean, it was a real headache to get through New York City on those two, just Route 1. It goes from north to south all the way from one coast up to New York. And it was a headache. I learned to respect good drivers and bad drivers. New York is full of terrible drivers. At that time, I should say. At that time. And but we made it okay.
Well, you know, I can relate to the days of before Interstate, and Steve and I were talking about that a while ago. And we had a recording contract with this company up there in New York called Vanguard.
And oh, yeah.
The country gentleman did. And
yeah.
We went up there to record, and we had this old infernal contraption of a bus. Was painted purple and silver. And we went up there in that awful-looking bus, and it made it up there. And we had Ricky Skaggs with us, me and Doyle Lawson, and Ricky Skaggs, and Charlie Waller, and Bill Yates. And Bill, he was a bus driver. Nobody else was allowed to drive but Bill, you know. And we stopped at one of these Howard Johnson places that they have along the New Jersey Turnpike there as you go up to New York. And Skaggs had been up in the front of the bus playing his fiddle. And we're kind of running through tunes. And he laid his fiddle in the seat, and we went on inside the Howard Johnson there to get something to eat. And when we came out, it was dark. And Doyle got up on the bus and sat right down on Ricky Skaggs' fiddle.
Oh, man. Oh,
he did. So, when we got to New York, we had to call Kenny Kosak or somebody up there that was a good fiddle player and had a fiddle, and he borrowed that fiddle and played the session on it. And So that's kind of my New York story. And actually, we wrote that song as we were approaching New York City. We were up there, you know, noodling around, picking in the bus, and on this Holland Tunnel, or one of those tunnels where you go up in New York, and it had this little grimy sign there that said, "Welcome to New York," and that's how come that song got that title, "Welcome to New York." Couldn't think of anything else. Oh, me. You know, there used to be a woman, I can't remember, her name was Nancy something, and I can't remember her last name, that used to do a festival in Hillsdale, New York. And there was a guy standing around up there one time, and it came a storm up, and lightning struck him. And it didn't kill him, but it burned. As I remember now, this might not be exactly right, but it burned it looked like a lightning bolt where lightning hit him. And this guy, I talked to him later. He said, "Man, I never felt nothing like that in my life." He said,
"I'll bet."
That was quite a rush, he said, when that lightning hit him.
Oh, man. Wow. I know who you're talking about, Nancy there. I can't recall her name either, but she was... She was big in promoting bluegrass up there in New England, around Boston and places like that.
And you sure was. Did a good job.
Yeah, did a good job. Yeah.
I can't remember her last name, though.
I can't. Well, you know, we're getting older, Sonny. You know, you're not supposed to remember stuff like that. You're just supposed to be rocking chair and think about it, you know?
Yeah, you ain't supposed to talk about stuff like that, though.
Is that the festival that's now in Gray, called Gray Fox?
What?
No.
No?
No, that's Eric Daub that you're thinking about.
Oh, okay.
No, Nancy.
Yeah, it escapes me.
I can't remember her name. I can see her face and the whole bit. I just can't remember her name. It was right on top of that hill, that big. You had to go right straight up a mountain to get to the festival ground at Hillsdale, New York, is where it was. That's right. That's right.
That's it.
And I can't remember her last name, though.
No. Well, she was she was helping us all, man, promoting bluegrass music. That's what they need to do.
I wouldn't doubt if she's not doing it still somewhere up there. But I think she lived in Boston, if I remember right.
She did.
I think she lived in Boston. So what you doing, Bill?
Well, I just got back from the Doyle Lawson Festival in Denton, North Carolina, where we held forth. Yesterday and last night, I had a big crowd, and it wasn't 110 degrees, and we didn't have a thunderstorm. So, man, our luck was running high. But, yeah, they had a good crowd. It's this Doyle Lawson's 33rd year down there. And they had a good crowd, you know, there wasn't an empty seat there. And, Junior Sisk was there, and Joe Mullins and the Radio Ramblers were there.
Those are two good bands.
And Joe was playing his Osborne Rocky Top banjo, as I was playing my Rocky Top banjo. So Sonny Osborne Day down in Denton, North Carolina.
I'm about to take over the world.
But yeah, we had a good time. Long drive back, you know how it is.
Joe was playing his Rocky Top?
Yes, he was.
Well, that's an interesting story, because he got that banjo about 3 weeks ago, I guess it was, and he called and complained about the second fret. He said, "Every time I try to play anything on the second fret, it's like it's muted." And so I said, "Well, get it back to me." And he did that. And I had Frank Neat put another fret in it. And then, now, Judy, my wife's sister, lives in Toledo, and she needed a lawnmower, and I had a lawnmower that I didn't need anymore, and so I told Judy, I said, why don't you take this lawnmower to Toledo, and as you go up there, take this badger with you and drop it off and exit 36 off 75 to Joe. And that way all that stuff will work out. And she did, and I hadn't heard from Joe yet. I don't know how it sounded or anything else, so I'm not really sure what happened after that. I haven't heard from him.
It sounded fine, and we were comparing mine with his and all that. And he told me that story about the fret. And
he
said, do you tune your banjo head by ear, or do you use a drum dial? And I said, well, Joe, I can't hear, you know, by ear. How do you tune a banjo head by ear? I can't do that. I don't hear no music there, you know, unless I play it. And I said, I use one of these drum dial things. I said, I get it somewhere between, and a drum dial, for those of you who don't know, is a device, a gauge that you put on the head of a drum, and it tells you how tight that drum head is. And works the same way on a banjo. And on a banjo, you know, anywhere between 89 and 92 is dependent on the banjo and the brand of banjo and stuff. But I find on Sonny's banjo that mine works best right around 91, between 90 and 91. And he said, well, Sonny set mine with a drum dial. And he said, you know, I didn't like the way it sounded.
Yeah, I know.
He said, so I backed it off a quarter of a turn. He said, just right. And it did sound good, man. I mean, it was talking. And
Does it sound like yours?
No. But he's not playing mine, and I'm not playing his. But, yeah, it's got the same quality. It's a quality sound. It's got a good tone, you know, and it's loud, and it sounds great. And, you know, makes a huge difference. You know, if you're a banjo player, you know that, you know, it's a good sounding banjo is three times easier to play. It just
oh,
is.
Yeah. Yeah, and, sure.
Your banjo, the Rocky Top, is a real easy banjo for me to play. It just, you know, I don't have to work myself to death to get the dynamics and get the tone out of it. It's just there, you know. It just seemed like it's helping me.
Well, you know, the model for that Rocky Top banjo is the original RB3 that I had since 1956. I think it was I bought that banjo. And I sold it about 2 years and a half ago to Aaron McDerris, who plays with Rhonda Vincent. And he was over here one day, and he said, you know, you should build one and just call it the Rocky Top Banjo, because that's how she was introducing him on stage, playing the Rocky Top Banjo. And I thought, well, why not? And so I built one, and Aaron's got one, you've got one, Bill Evans has one, Joe, and Rick Stern in Indiana has one, and some guys in Chicago has one. So there's seven out there already, and that's not too bad. And the funny thing about it is these things sound different some way than anything I've built so far. I don't know why. But they do. They sound different. But now I do have a new tone ring that I designed, and that banjo has the new tone ring in it, and it seemed to make quite a difference. It really did.
Yeah, I think I have another. I have a Walnut Chief that I bought a couple of years ago, as you know.
Yeah.
It has a Blaylock tone ring in it, and which is a really good tone ring. A lot of people like them. You know, they buy a new Gibson or a reissued Gibson and stick a Blaylock tone ring in it, and voila, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a quality that the Rocky Top has that a lot of banjos don't have, and it's so good that, you know, it just sets it apart.
Hey, Sonny, let me ask you something if I jump in here for a second. When you said you're going to design one like the RB3 that Aaron had, What were you trying to make different between that and, let's say, the chief that is out there now?
What, the one you have?
Yes, sir.
Okay. The one you have, first of all, is maple, and it's all gold, and it has the original Blaylock tone ring in it. And the thing that's different about the Rocky Top banjo, it is nickel. All the hardware on it is nickel. It is Flying Eagle pattern, inlay pattern, double cut peg head, and it is mahogany, but yet it has a gold tone ring in it. And the tone ring is a new design that I've got that I actually... I didn't copy anything, but I had an idea from something else that I had. And Bill Blaylock built the tone ring, and it worked out just perfectly, and it really made a difference in the way it sounded. I don't know whether it's the tone ring. I don't know what the difference is, whether it may be the nickel and the gold together with mahogany, but it really makes a difference. And now I put that tone ring in a couple of maple banjos, and it made quite a difference in them too. And Bill, don't you have one of those tone rings in is it a maple banjo? Or
I have a maple banjo, a maple chief, and I have a walnut chief in addition to the Rocky Top. I have that new tone ring in both those banjos.
Oh, okay.
I like the way the banjo sounded before too, but I like it better now. It's just a quality there.
It's got a different quality to it. I was just listening to Daniel has recorded a new album with Marty Raven. Ooh. And Daniel is a good player.
Mm-hmm.
And he has I think it's Chief number 89. That Daniel has, and it's got a regular Blaylock tone ring in it, and there is quite a difference in the new tone ring and the old tone ring. And don't ask me why; I couldn't tell you why. But I do know that Bill Blaylock, when he built that old tone ring, the original tone ring, he didn't do like almost everybody else does: take a sample of the old Gibson tone ring and try to recreate that. He didn't do that. He used his own formula, and it came out that he's, in my mind, Bill, right now, Blaylock builds the best tone ring that you can get right now. And then when I had him build this new one, it's a little different design and has a space in there, and I think that really creates a different quality. It's got a little bit harder tone, maybe a little bit, but it's got the sustain of the old one, and it's got the I don't know, elasticity. I guess that would be. It's got that kind of sound to it. It's very different than the other ones. I tend to like it quite a bit.
I do too. I enjoy playing it. And I'll tell you something else about it. It's a lot of times you get a banjo sounds good open in G, and but when you get the capo down there in B, it kind of dies off a little bit, you know. Some banjos do that. And the Rocky Top does not do that. It does not die off. It's just as powerful and just as loud down in B as it is in G or A or anywhere else up and down the neck.
Yeah, I think so too. That it's quite different, and I think that I don't know whether the tone. I don't know what made the difference. You can take two banjos and build them exactly the same. Use the same tone range, same everything, and they'll be different. I don't know what it makes it. It's just wood and metal. Yeah. Is all it is. Something makes a difference. Now, Bill Evans has a Rocky Top banjo that he says it's good, but he said that he kept waiting for it to get better and improve. But I think Bill is trying to compare it to a 1933 Granada, and you just can't compare those banjos, new banjos, with something that's 75, 78, 80 years old. You can't do it.
No, can't be done.
Sonny,
well, how long did he wait, too? You know, you got to consider that those pre-war banjos, those things have aged and aged, and they've been exposed to all sorts of temperature extremes back in the days. They had no air conditioning. They had no humidity control. They left them in the trunk of the car. They left them in a cold house with no heat, and those things, you know, they aged just right, the way I look at it. And, you know, if somebody waits 6 months, they're not going to get a 60, 70-year-old banjo.
No. No, you can't. When I bought that RB3 that Aaron has right now, that is the banjo that the Rocky Top is a copy of.
Right.
When I first bought that banjo in 1956, I was the second owner, and the guy bought it new in 36 or 37, I can't remember, and it was made in 34. And that was the worst sounding instrument that I'd ever had my hands on at that time in 1956. And it was an original 5-string flathead RB3, and it sounded terrible until about 1958 or 59, right in there, it started sounding better. But that banjo always played so hard that I never did like it, because you had to really work at it to play, and you put all your energy into trying to make it sound like anything, and you didn't have time to be creative, as I really, that was my whole thing. If I couldn't just be free to play what I wanted to, I wasn't very good. And I got this Granada then in 78, and it just completely changed everything around. And I decided to build the original Chief as a copy of that Granada. And then Aaron talked me into building this Rocky Top banjo, which, it, now that I talk about it, it has to be the tone ring is the difference. It just has to be.
Yeah.
Do you, Sonny, do you think that, you know, you had this sound of the RB3 that, by the way, we're talking to Bill Emerson and Sonny Osborne here. Do you think that what you recreated is your attempt to sound like the RB3, not just a different banjo, but do you think, in other words, you succeeded in coming close to that RB3 sound?
I can say this about that. I've heard Aaron with Ron DeVincent on the Grand Ole Opry play both of them, and they are very much alike. Kristen now has a maple, gold maple, with the new tone ring. As a matter of fact, she had the first new tone ring, and she really loved it a great deal. And I don't know if she's still playing it or not, but her banjo sounded quite a bit different with that new tone ring in it. It makes a lot of difference in it, some way. And they're reasonably cheap, too, compared to other people that make tone rings.
Well, there you go. Bill Emerson drove in this morning from a festival, as you heard, and was, Bill, I appreciate you calling in. We're about out of time, folks. I'm just a couple minutes away from signing off, but I sure do appreciate both of you calling in and sharing some stories and some nice talk about banjos. I always like talking about banjos, so I think we did a good job today. I just got to sit back and listen. You guys educated everybody listening. I appreciate it.
Hey, Bill is going to be at my banjo camp. For all of you who, we'll continue this then, if not before then.
Yeah. Hey, we're talking about nothing but banjo.
Yep. Yep. Hey, listen.
And,
go ahead.
We always have a good time.
Oh, it's a blast. It's a blast. Absolute blast. Bill Emerson, thanks, man. I know you're tired and you drove back from a festival, and And Sonny, appreciate.
I'm never too tired to talk about banjos, and also I want to thank you for the opportunity to talk to one of my heroes, one of my all-time heroes, and the guy that I feel lucky to have as a friend, is Sonny Osborne, the great Sonny Osborne. And I appreciate it very much, Sonny. It's a pleasure talking to you.
You know what I think of you, so that goes both ways, buddy. Take care.
All right. Hey, I'll see you guys later. Thanks so much, Bill and Sonny. Thank you.